And then you,
actually, probably would be good.
Then,
place.
Then you push it the other way and it locks it.
All right.
So it's locked.
Okay, so we're live. So it won't come off when I put it in my pocket.
Nope.
Okay, cool.
So you can listen to these online if you want to catch anything.
Yeah, I know. Where is that? I've been trying to find it online and I couldn't.
I'll show you. I'll do a little class afterwards.
Okay, cool.
I went and looked.
They're not there.
Well, no, it was only up to a certain date.
Well, we just started doing it like 2 months ago.
Oh, yeah, we started.
There's only like six or eight of them.
When did we start recording? I think Song of Solomon, maybe. Or
yeah, or Psalms. Yeah,
something like that. Dennis is there.
Jeremy and I, Isaiah.
Oh, they weren't there? Yeah, that could be.
We forgot the thing once, yeah. And I know Steve talked in it, and it kept getting messed up. So there's been a couple that won't be on there.
But. All right, so let's get rolling. Does everybody have a handout? Everybody have a pen?
Yes, sir.
All right, because there's a ton of information today. I told some of the folks before the class that, you know, some of these books, even though they're small, Lamentations is only five chapters, and it takes 30, 40 minutes to read. There is so much in Lamentations, especially about hope, and there's so many New Testament principles in Lamentations that it's really hard to pare it down into like a 45-minute discussion. So that's kind of a challenge. But I kind of mentioned before class that we started back in November going through the Bible, Genesis, back in November. Every week we do the next book. About a month ago, we started the last section of the Old Testament, which is called the Prophets. And it's a list of 16 prophets that are in the Bible. And we're going to go through each one of these guys. And so far, we've went through Isaiah and Jeremiah. Does everyone have their Isaiah, Jeremiah handouts?
I don't.
You've got some. Okay, yeah, let me get you some. Particularly Jeremiah, because I have a timeline in there of some things we'll be talking about for the next few weeks. Do you need Jeremiah? Oh, you need both. Okay. You need Isaiah and Jeremiah? Okay, good deal. Oh, thanks, Dennis. Yeah, if you can come up and get you on Roxy's.
Okay. Can take them back?
There's those two. I think I need an Isaiah. All right, cool. Oh, you going to be? I don't know. Yeah, definitely. I'll get some. We can even get you a book. And these are all messed up. I think these are two. Is that an Isaiah?
It's an Isaiah.
There's a Jeremiah.
Good. Thank you.
All right. Because in the Jeremiah handout, I gave you guys this little timeline of events that we're going to be talking about for the next few weeks. And Angela, Dawn and Angela usually sat here. I think they're doing kids this morning. But Angela gave me the idea of let's do a test. You know, and I got thinking, okay, why don't we do a little pop quiz kind of as we go? Because there's 16 of these prophets, and every couple prophets, let's just talk about the highlights of those prophets. So then by the time we get to the end, everyone will have a working knowledge of all 16 prophets. Does that sound good? So in your handout, the Lamentations handout, on the back page, this is our review of Isaiah and Jeremiah, and I'm sorry for the ones that may not have been here for those two, but it's good you're here now. Raymond, you're just in time. We're just getting started. And most important thing.
Wrong Raymond.
Yeah, Raymond Herman. Grab a handout there, Raymond. We're talking about Lamentations. The last couple weeks we've talked about Isaiah and Jeremiah, so we're going to do a quick review of Isaiah and Jeremiah. And I didn't want to give out, you know, 15 candy bars, so I'm going cheap with Hershey's Kisses. Yeah. So, the first, and after we do this, then we'll get into Lamentations. Let me pour some out here.
See ya.
Oh man, where's my sheet? Wow.
Uh-oh. It's right here.
Is it under there? Okay, long as I have it, I'll be a dancing monkey up here. All right, so first, the first question. The Old Testament prophets, these 16 guys we're going to talk about, were always men from the tribe of Levi. True or false? True or false?
First 16 prophets.
The prophets in the Old Testament, particularly the ones we're talking about, are they always men from the tribe of Levi?
True.
False.
False.
Oh,
I
wasn't
Dennis.
Sure. I wasn't sure.
Because there's also women prophets. Remember Deborah back in Judges? Prophets were from different tribes, not just Levi. I kind of slipped a tricky one in on you there, but they were from multiple tribes. A prophet was just a guy that had a message from God to deliver to somebody. Or girl. I shouldn't have said guy. All right. That's the first one. All right. The second question. The rules for the prophets are outlined in Deuteronomy 13, 1 through 5, and 18, 20 to 22.
Man,
yeah, that's true, because that was so specific.
There you go. True.
There you go. I'll be like Lambert's.
We might get sued.
There you go.
Watch out.
Yeah, wham! Yeah, the book of Deuteronomy, before Moses took the children of Israel, you know, this is my map of the Middle East. Israel's over here. In the book of Deuteronomy and Numbers and in the beginning of the Bible, before Moses took the children of Israel into the promised land, the book of Deuteronomy outlines rules for kings, prophets, and priests. And we've talked about kings multiple times. Well, this is the rules for the priests. We're here. Let's see. The next. Samuel. Remember Samuel back here in the Kings and Chronicles, Samuel the prophet. True or false? He ran a school of prophets.
True.
That is true. A lot of people don't realize that. And I think I may have mentioned it, may not have.
Baseball skills are bad.
Samuel actually ran a school of prophets, and those guys were always cooking around Israel. It was kind of during the time of Elisha and Elijah prophesying for the Lord. Just a little bit of trivia there. So there's that is true. True. Samuel did run a school for prophets. All right. We've talked about this many times. The major prophets, the big books, Isaiah, Ezekiel, and such, they have more important messages than the minors. Like Amos, yes. Everybody's known. Hey, I heard you there, Matthew. So, yeah. Our Bibles, people divide up the prophets, the 16 prophets, as major and minors. And the only reason they're majors and minors is because of the length of the book. And just like Lamentations, it seems like the smaller the books are, the more is in them. Some of these little guys like Amos and Obadiah, there's just so much in those little short.
Jonah,
just a few chapters. Lots of stuff in them little books. So just because they're minor, they're not minor in message. All right, that's our review. So, and after we do Ezekiel and Daniel, we'll do another one of these. I'll probably throw in another. Oh, wait, I'm not done. We're not done with them. And, we're down to the good stuff. All right, the next section. Every one of these blanks is either Isaiah or Jeremiah as the answer. Yeah, good, I get to throw one of these. So, for the first question. Which prophet, Isaiah or Jeremiah, was sanctified and ordained before he was born?
Jeremiah.
All right. God told him not to get married.
Isaiah.
Close.
Jeremiah.
So I'll give you one for effort. All right. Jeremiah was told to not get married. It's assigned it was assigned to Israel that. For some things I don't want to get into right now. We'll talk about that in a little bit. All right. The next question. God told this prophet to preach naked and barefoot for 3 years. That is Isaiah. Remember, God told Isaiah to go around preach naked to be a sign that your sins have made you naked and exposed before God.
We think you missed one.
Did I? Oh, yeah, I did. Yeah. See, even though it's big font,
sure.
All right. The third question there, I should have numbered these guys. The prophet that was from high society, the Johnson County guy we talked about, He was related to the king.
Isaiah.
All right, Sherry. Heads up. Yeah, Isaiah. You guys remember Isaiah, the big book, 66 chapters. He was like an aristocrat of his time. He was related to the king. He was very eloquent. He had a large vocabulary. He was kind of a Johnson County man. So that's the way we talk about him. So, okay, this next one. He's called the Prince of Prophets. And many other esteemed names, because his book is so awesome. That is Isaiah. Here you go, Dennis. There's one more of the road. Isaiah is also called the Prince of Prophets. Actually, Spurgeon tagged him with that one. Okay, this prophet often wept for Jerusalem and his people. Jeremiah, the weeping prophet. This guy, next, he preached while wearing an ox yoke to symbolize bondage. Preached with an ox yoke. Yeah, Jeremiah. Remember, he puts on an ox yoke and walks around town letting Israel know they're getting ready to be put in bondage. All right, the next one. Remember the book that's called the Miniature Bible?
Isaiah.
I heard Dennis first. I heard Dale. Whee! These are fine. I might get these more often. All right. He was an eloquent speaker with a large vocabulary.
Jeremiah.
That's close. Isaiah. Yeah, he knew like over 2,000 words that he uses. Isaiah, yep. He was put in jail many times. This guy was.
Jeremiah.
All right, Kevin. Jeremiah jailed many times. All right, the next one. This prophet wrote about the coming Messiah more than any other prophet in the Old Testament.
Isaiah.
Yeah, he talked about a virgin. The Handel's Messiah is actually quotes from the book of Isaiah.
Cool. Right in the chest.
Yeah.
All right, the next one. This guy, while he was in jail, he actually bought land. Jeremiah, yes. He was the redeemer. That was his kinsman redeemer role. He had so much faith that God was going to bring Israel back to Jerusalem that he actually bought land as Babylon was sacking the city. So, yes. All right, in Acts 8.
Isaiah.
Yeah.
Who said that? Yes. Man, that was good, Roxy. Didn't even get it.
Kelly, you got to get in on this.
There it is.
There's a 100%
chance again.
Yes, Isaiah is quoted in the New Testament many times. Yeah, you'll get one. There you go.
And just for trying, too, he said.
Yeah, that's right. Just for being in the class. All right, the next one. This guy, this prophet, actually lived through the siege of Jerusalem and witnessed it firsthand. Was it Isaiah or Jeremiah?
Jeremiah.
Yes, Jeremiah. More candy. More candy. All right, the next one. This guy wrote about a new covenant that's coming. A new covenant.
Jeremiah,
chapter 31. Yes. All right, next we got... Okay, now are the messages. These are the messages of the prophets to Judah. The first one, his message is judgment is coming because of disobedience. Prepare for 70 years of captivity.
What?
Jeremiah. Jeremiah is the first prophet that actually said 70 years is coming. And Jeremiah told him, well, let's go to the next one, then I'll finish that thought. The next one is return to the Lord to prevent judgment. A Messiah, that's Isaiah. Isaiah came and told him, you guys are doing wrong, you need to repent, or judgment will come. Well, Jeremiah comes along a few years later and says, you guys have not repented, judgment is coming, and you need to surrender.
See a distinction.
Yeah, that's the big thing with those two guys. All right, last one. Jewish tradition states that this prophet was stoned and killed by his own people.
Jeremiah.
Yes, Jeremiah. Where was it at?
Where was it?
In Egypt. Hmm. His own people, they say, killed Jeremiah. Because they didn't like him. Because Jeremiah was kind of a traitor in their eyes. Because he's telling them to to surrender. Yeah. All right, the next one. Who was sawn in half?
Oh, no, it's Isaiah now.
Isaiah.
By default.
Isaiah, all right, who didn't get one? Who wants one? Who didn't get one? Here, Matt, one more for the road. All right, that's our little review of those two guys.
That's a good quiz, bro.
Yeah, kind of reinforced some things. All right, so what we're talking about, the two prophets, Isaiah and Jeremiah, I drew this line, this timeline up here. This is the children of Israel, you know, God's people. You know, we all know David the king. Then we had Solomon. You guys remember how the kingdoms divided under the two sons of, or some sons of Solomon? Isaiah.
Yeah.
I'm going to put Isaiah. Isaiah prophesied kind of toward the end of the time of God's people, Israel and Jerusalem. Okay? Jeremiah came along later. I'm going to put Jerry here. Jeremiah kind of picked up after Isaiah and went through the siege of Jerusalem. And you remember on your timeline from last week or last time we were together that Daniel and Ezekiel also show up while Jeremiah is prophesying, okay? Ezekiel, well, actually Daniel is next. Let me just do this real quick because I got to get going. Well, he starts here, but here's Daniel. Here's Ezekiel. He kind of started here and he went through to the end. So, what the reason I'm drawing this is I'm just kind of showing you guys the relationship of these books. Isaiah, Jeremiah, Daniel, and Ezekiel are all kind of talking about the same time frame.
Is that a picture of the destruction?
That's terrible. That's the city on fire. I tried to draw a little city, Jerusalem, with some flames, but
that's good.
Yeah, I'm glad you pointed that out. And then this was the northern tribes that we don't care about them right now. We're going to get to these guys when we start in with like Amos and Hosea and the other some of the other prophets, but I don't want to confuse that. But all right. So we've covered Isaiah and Jeremiah. The Book of Lamentations. Let's get to that now. So any questions on anything so far? I'm going to kind of shift gears and actually get into the book. All right, Lamentations. Yeah, Suzanne read Lamentations. Did anyone get a chance to read Lamentations in the last few weeks? Okay, Angie did. I know Sherry did. Suzanne did. And they picked up that Lamentations is it's a very sad book. It's a book of, like, poems. It's a lot like Psalms, the book of Psalms, the way each chapter is a poem, a lament. And the thing with Lamentations, it's like a book of prayers that Jeremiah writes as he's standing amongst the ruins of Jerusalem. Because remember the very last chapter in Jeremiah, the city gets taken. Well, now we come to the very sorrowful book of Lamentations, where Jeremiah is basically standing in the city of ruins, and he's weeping, and he writes the book of Lamentations in kind of a song form, just explaining the grief that he has. And one of the things that I thought of when I was reading this, it's a lot like, it reminds me of like 9/11, when 9/11 happened. You guys were pretty young, I think, but what's that been, like 18 years now? Or 17 years.
17 years.
And you guys probably remember when 9/11 happened, you know, as a country, we all came together and just national mourning. we had more love for each other for those few weeks. You know, we talked about the Lord, we talked about God, we talked about hope, that things are going to get better. It was really a very sweet time, even though it was very sad. A lot of us couldn't sleep at night. I had trouble sleeping. I remember it was just tragic.
I was in school.
Yeah, and it was so sad. And that kind of reminds me what Lamentations is about. He has just seen his country that he loves destroyed by an enemy. Okay, and the thing that is sad about Lamentations is it didn't have to happen. That's why I put it's the book of consequences, because what it is, it's a book that reminds us what is at risk when we don't follow the Lord and do what's right. There is a lot at risk. And that's what Lamentations, that's why it's such a sad book when he talks about the things that went on in Jerusalem and they didn't have to happen. Now, I'm not saying anything about 9/11 didn't have to happen, but I'm just comparing that it's such a sad thing when you see your country destroyed. I told some of the people before class started, I was reading Lamentations. We were actually in Branson when the whole duck boat thing was going on, and just how, you know, it's hard to sleep at night. It's just so sad. And that's what Lamentations is. It's so sad when you think about how it didn't have to happen. But what God is so awesome with the book is in the third chapter of Lamentations, the sun starts shining again, and he gives us just some of the best verses on hope and how to get through the pain. Even though we may have goofed up and done something wrong, and we experience the consequences, he is still there to help you through it. And that's what Lamentations is about. So, the Book of Consequences is what I titled this one. Like I said, it didn't have to happen. It was written around 587, right when Jerusalem was burning, by Jeremiah. It's a short book. It only takes around 30 minutes to read. I put a quick little definition, point B there on the handout, Lamentations. That's not a word we use a lot, but it's used a lot in the Bible. Lamenting. It's just the sorrowful, grieving, weeping, wailing. This is just a book of sorrowful songs. All right, point C, the 50,000-foot summary. The book is about the misery and the bondage that will eventually come to those who continue in sin and disobedience. You know, and yet the compassions and mercies of God will bring hope to those that seek Him. So Isaiah warned them, don't go there, repent, turn around, follow God. That's when God taps us on the shoulders when we're doing something we shouldn't be doing. Jeremiah, and they don't change, and Jeremiah comes along and says, okay, you had it, you're going to judgment, but God hasn't left you, and there is hope. And this is just for a time. So, all right, that was point C. So, now, D, the key verse, Lamentations 3:22. Let's flip over there and look at that real quick. Hopefully you guys have heard this verse here. It's one of my favorite verses. Think of it all the time. Lamentations 3:22 and 23 are really this is where the book turns. And we'll talk about it more in a little bit, but Lamentations 3:22 says, "It is of the Lord's mercies that we are not consumed, because his compassions fail not. They are new every morning. Great is thy faithfulness." You guys need them? Oh, does everybody have a Bible? Does anyone need a Bible? Okay, Sharon. Okay, that's good. I need to take it. So that's kind of the turning point in the book, 3:22, 23. We'll talk about it more here in a second when we go through each chapter. All right, Christ and Lamentations, point number E. In every book we study, you know, I always try to point out how Christ is represented or how he can be found in that book. In Lamentations, Christ is portrayed as my portion. And this is a whole study of itself. There are many times in the Bible, I think there's 6 or 8 times in the Bible, where God is told as our portion. Sufficient, yeah. Actually, I have a typo. It's not Lamentations 3:20. That's Lamentations 3:24. I think Sherry missed that one. I blame on her. She's my proofreader. My wife is. Yeah. Because I'm a terrible speller. I thank the Lord for Word because it fixes all my mistakes and grammar. And like I put here, when we have lost everything, when you've lost your house, your finances, your health, when you've lost it all, just like these people have, God is still your portion. And in the Old Testament, you may remember, it's a cool illustration of this. When they went into the land of Israel, when the children of Israel crossed the Jordan and God gave them the land of Israel, they divided the land up amongst the tribes. Every land had an inheritance. Every land had a portion that was theirs, except one tribe, and that was the tribe of Levi, the priests. They did not have a land. God was their inheritance. Just as today, we don't have, God doesn't promise us physical possessions and things. God promises us himself. He is our portion. And I just put in a few verses there that's kind of pointed out. So that's a neat whole study. One time I did a study on my portion and the inheritance of God. It's really cool. All right, so point F, what's Lamentations all about? You know, I kind of already talked about it. Isaiah preached to the people for like 40 or 50 years. Jeremiah preached to them for 40 years. So they've heard the message. Jerusalem was a small place. I don't know if you remember from the Nehemiah book, but Jerusalem was only like 30 acres. They all knew each other. They all knew Isaiah. They knew Jeremiah. They heard each other. And these guys knew each other. They even referenced each other in their books. So just think how sad it would have been to be Jeremiah. And remember, when the Babylonians took Jerusalem, they thought favorably of Jeremiah because Jeremiah was trying to talk the people into surrendering. And they knew that. Babylonians knew that. So they didn't take Jeremiah captive. They let him stay. So Jeremiah is standing there in Jerusalem watching all of his friends and family getting marched out, chained up like POWs. And he could have had the attitude like, I told you so. I've been telling you for 40 years to get right. But instead, he wept. He cried over it because it was tragic what was going on. And that's the way we ought to be. I mean, we have a message of salvation, just like Jeremiah did, that we need to tell our friends and family to avoid the coming judgment. And we should, you know, need to do it out of love, of course, and weep when they don't follow our counsel. Because it is sad whenever someone's needing help and you tell them what to do and they just ignore your counsel. And you know that God has given you a message for them, they just ignore it. That's kind of what happened with Jeremiah. So it's why this is such a sad book. So he was standing there amongst the ruins of Jerusalem, weeping, writing these poems. I'm going to look at this section, see if there's anything I wanted to point out. The judgment that came on Jerusalem, we talked about this a little last time. Whenever Moses brought the children into the Promised Land, in the end of Deuteronomy, chapters 28 through 30, they made an agreement with God that they would follow him. And God was very clear that, okay, if you follow me, I'm going to bless you and give you the land to live on and all the cool stuff that he did for them. But if you don't follow me, you're going to be removed from your land, you're going to be punished, and you're going to be sent away captive. That's what he promised them. And that's what the destruction of Jerusalem was. It was God fulfilling his promise. Because I think so many times we think about God and all the good things he wants to give us, but we don't think about the bad things that he can give us if we don't follow him. You know, we kind of have this message of God is love and God loves everyone, which is true, but he won't let you continue in your sin unpunished forever. There will be a day when judgment does come. And that's a sign of his faithfulness, that he will do what he says he'll do. You know, I mean, how wrong would it be if God allowed two people to act, one good, one evil, and he never punished the evil? We would think that's wrong, unless we're the one doing the evil. Then it's different. Yeah, Kevin?
I was told, I kind of got into a disagreement with somebody the other day because I was told basically that, you know, we live in a time of grace, that that he doesn't do bad things to us, that it's a result of our sin that the bad things happen to us, like, you know, people getting weak, sick, dying. It's a result of the sin, not God.
Not God, yeah. And that's kind of the message we hear today. And that is a different message than what's in the Bible. And that's actually one reason why I love the old preachers. That reminds me of what you're saying of, I don't know if you've ever heard of Jonathan Edwards. He was a great preacher in the 1700s. And he actually came up with an awesome sermon, Sinners in the Hands of an Angry God. Hey, Dale, have you ever heard that?
Yeah,
or read it? Man, it's like convicting. Whenever someone just takes the word and just really preaches that there's blessings and punishments for following God in a way we don't hear it today, it's very good. I mean, I downloaded it a few years ago, the transcript. I'm sure it's out there. Sinners in the Hands of an Angry God. It was by Jonathan Edwards in the 1700s. It's an awesome sermon that talks about how, just like what you're saying, yes, God does love us, he loves all people, but he can't allow us to live in our sin and blaspheme him in his name forever unpunished. There will be a day.
Our discipleship teaches that it's a chastisement, not a punishment, because a punishment is like when our dad would beat us with a belt.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, I can see that. Chastisement.
Is, you know, God giveth and taketh away.
Yeah, and Hebrews actually uses chastisement. Yeah. So, anyway, that's what the book's about. That's a book. What it's about is Jeremiah standing amongst the ruins, watching his friends and family go off as POWs, and he pens the Book of Lamentations, and he writes these five poems or songs about what he has just seen. All right, and I got some cool stuff about that. We'll get to that in a second. Now, to help us understand what he's doing and what he's looking at, I just did a quick little table here of some interesting facts about the destruction of the city. And I think it's good to really put your head into what's happened and how bad it really is. We're just going to kind of go through this quickly. The point number one, all through Isaiah and Jeremiah, it's called out that Nebuchadnezzar and Babylon are getting ready to attack. But once it actually happens in Lamentations, Nebuchadnezzar and Babylon are never mentioned. God is really letting us know that he was behind it. It wasn't really Nebuchadnezzar, it was God doing it. So I think that's a neat little fact. All right, point number two. As Babylon was coming to attack down from the north, and as they were on their way, Jerusalem was blowing the horn. Everybody, if you want to get saved, get into the city and get protected behind the city walls. And that's just kind of a neat thing. So overnight, the population of Jerusalem would have grown, which is going to lead to the trouble. Let me draw Jerusalem over here real quick. So I'm going to use it a couple times. You remember Jerusalem was it's kind of this shape. The temple is up here. They had the Gihon, the spring down here. They had different gates, sheep gates and such around. All right, so that was Jerusalem, and it was around 30 acres. All right. Nebuchadnezzar is coming down from the north. People are flocking into the city to get protection behind the city walls. So overnight, the population expanded. No one can come or go. Point number three, Babylon. The armies of Babylon encircle the city, and they cut it off. No one goes in or out, which is a real problem because they've got a limited amount of food in here. They start building their, I think it's cool the way the Bible calls it, siege machines. And we've probably all seen, like, Lord of the Rings and all the cool stuff that they build, and these towers, rolling towers that they can come up to the city you know, catapult stuff into, and the big battering rams, you know, that they bust into the city, and all this cool stuff that they're doing, to tearing the city up. That's what's going on. All right. So point number four, oh, and it lasted a year and a half.
Wow.
Yeah, it lasted a long time, because Nebuchadnezzar is in no big hurry. He's got food and water and shelter, and, you know, they're fine. But the people inside the city are limited on food and water and everything. Well, actually, not water, but they're limited on resources. So point four there, Jerusalem had an internal water supply, the Blank Springs. Anyone remember what that is? The Gihon. And what's really cool about that is it was a spring. It's the only freshwater spring in Jerusalem. And back in the days of Hezekiah, back in here, he had enough forethought to like cover this thing up and put in like an aqueduct system to water the people. Gihon is like G-I-H-O-N, something like that. That's the fresh water supply. That's where Solomon was anointed. A lot of cool stuff went on there. But all right, so they had water. They didn't have any food. And they ran out of food after about 4 months. That's point.
Start like being kind of cannibalistic.
That's when they started with the cannibal stuff. And actually, it even gets worse. Before they ran out of food, they ran out of wood to cook their food. So the Ezekiel, we'll talk about this next week, predicts that they're going to actually use human dung to make little dung bricks to cook their food on, mm-hmm. because they are so desperate for wood. It gets really bad in Jerusalem, and that went on for months. They're jammed together in the alleys, they're cooking their food over poop, and there's sound of the battering rams are going on out here. It's a bad time. Point number seven, the siege continued. They're having problems with trash. Jeremiah talks about they're going to start throwing bodies over the wall, because when you got all these dead bodies with disease and everything else, you got to get them out of the city, because you need to get rid of it. Yeah, they're dropping them over there. I mean, it's bad. So bad is what's going on. All right, now point number eight. I wanted to make sure we cover this. Nebuchadnezzar finally breaks through the wall, and he destroys Jerusalem. And it happened on like the 7th through the 9th of Av. That's a month in the Jewish calendar. It's the same date that the second temple ends up getting destroyed on. Okay, the 7th, actually it's the 9th of Av. All right, and this is kind of region. I wasn't sure if anyone would know this. Does anyone know what the first month in the Jewish calendar is? And I put a hint that...
Is that why Ezekiel... Oh, no, I was just thinking still back about that dung. Is that why he was mixing the dung with the bread or whatever?
Yeah, that's what he does in, like, chapter 4. We're going to talk about that next week. Nissan, yeah, Leo, you the man. Yeah, there you go, here's another one. Yeah, Leo, he's on it. So remember whenever the children of Israel were in Egypt with Moses... Let my people go. I'm sorry. In the Bible, it's called Nisan, but it's actually April, March, April on our calendar. Yeah, that's the biblical answer. But in Egypt, when God instituted the Passover and he's getting ready to set the children free, the children of Israel, he redid their calendar system and said April-ish will be your first month. And that's even today, that's their first month. So. In spring, yeah. I'm saying all that to say this. The destruction of Jerusalem occurred in Av, and they celebrated every year. It's the destruction of the first and second temple, same day. So God did it on the same day.
Really?
Huh. Yeah, like, what is it, 670 years apart. Wow. That is the saddest day on the Jewish calendar. They're celebrating the destruction of their temples. And that day was about 2 weeks ago. I even texted Steve that morning because this year it was the end of July. They celebrated it on the 21st this year. And that's when they all go into their synagogues and they all stand against the Wailing Wall and do that thing. They're chanting Lamentations. As when you see them on the TV at the Wailing Wall doing that, their little ringlets are going, they're chanting like Lamentations mourning over the destruction of their city. So that's kind of what that's all about. So Jeremiah, these books are about the destruction of the first temple. When does the second temple get built?
When?
There is a second. This is the first one.
Solomon?
This is Solomon's.
So
Ezra, Nehemiah. So our books, like I've said before, are kind of out of order.
So it's Ezra,
Nehemiah, those two books are when the children of Israel return to the land and they rebuild temple number two.
Huh.
Yeah. So it's kind of, you know, they're a little out of order. Our book's about out of order in that respect. In other ways, it's okay. But yeah.
Was that the one temple destroyed in 70 A.D.?
Yes, that was my next question. When is the second one? The second one gets destroyed in 70 A.D. when Titus takes Jerusalem. Yeah. And so right now there is no temple in Jerusalem. That is the problem that we're going to talk about with Daniel in a few weeks. So temples 1 and 2 have been destroyed. As soon as temple 3 starts construction, pack your bags because we're getting ready to head out.
So Jim, the blanks are Nisan, Ezra, and Nehemiah.
They have all the building supplies.
70 A.D.
Yeah, by whom?
By whom is Ezra and Nehemiah?
Okay, and what was
70 A.D.? 70 A.D., the second temple was destroyed. Second temple is when Jesus was actually teaching in. Second temple's gone.
When was it built?
Oh, it was built 70 years later. It was, around 530. These guys. Yeah.
When it says when does the second temple get built? Is that, are you saying it's during those books?
Yeah, it gets built 70 years later would be a good.
Okay, that's what.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Well, the blank is when does the second temple get built?
70 years later.
Oh, yeah, that's the answer.
530 A.D.
530 would be good. 530 B.C. I know, I'm getting tricky up here. Getting too many blanks. I'm getting all twisted up here.
By whom is Ezra Nehemiah?
Ezra Nehemiah built it. When they come back. Yeah, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to. The reason I kind of stuck that in, I've stuck this into a lot of them, because it's really important to understand your Old Testament is kind of revolves around these temples, up to this point anyway. And so it's kind of good to just have a good working knowledge of what is going on. So whenever you read Ezra and Nehemiah, that's 70 years after what we're talking about right now, the destruction of Jerusalem.
And just to clarify, those in the Jewish calendar are the end of the Jewish calendar. Those books were written in Ezra and Nehemiah. They're talking.
Oh, about yeah, in the Hebrew. Yeah, that's their last books. Actually, it's Second Chronicles, but it's toward the end.
Because the last thing he tells them to do is go back to the land.
Go back, yes. Yep. So, yes, you're exactly right. If anyone clear on that, I don't want to leave anybody hanging, but this is the first temple gets destroyed. They go to Babylon for 70 years. God brings them back in these books, Esther, Nehemiah, and Ezra. They rebuild a second temple. Jesus teaches in that temple. And then Rome destroys that temple, and there's still no temple. They have no temple right now. All right. Yeah, let's get off of that one. Alright, point nine, that's the ninth of the Av that they celebrate. It's sad times for them. Point number 10, the Western Wall, that's the Wailing Wall. The Western Wall, when you see them today on CNN doing their thing against the Western Wall, that is the wall of the Second Temple. That's all they have to go to. This one's totally gone. The second temple, there's just a wall left on the west side, so that's why they all stand there and they put little prayers in the cracks. And that's what that's about. Both temples destroyed on the same day, 9th of Av. And point 11, I wanted to point this out. You guys, you know, we've talked about Israel and the children of Israel for a long time. And all through this time, they keep getting caught up in Baal worship and idolatry. And all the stuff they did, Molech, Ashtoreth. When God sends them to Babylon for the 70 years that we're talking about now, he finally breaks them of that. There's no more idolatry, really, after they come back on a national level. So, interesting little trivia. And I put some verses in there to talk about how when you go astray, before I went astray, now I've kept thy word. It's good for me to be afflicted. I might learn thy statutes. All right, I got to get wrong. All right, so now let's look at the book. See, that's what I was saying. Lamentations, I could go on for 4 hours on this book because we haven't even really got into it yet. There's a lot in this book. It's a neat book. All right, so let's look at, another thing cool about Lamentations. Have you guys ever heard of acrostic? You've heard of it, but you may not know what it is. Let's say, hey, I need another board. I'm going to get rid of this. All right, so let's say it's after 9/11, and you're just heartbroken, and you want to write, you need to write, you get your thoughts on paper, but you don't even know where to start. You're so heartbroken after 9/11. So you just write out the alphabet, A, B, C, D, all the way down, just to have a starting point, okay? So you can say, like, you know, alas, my city has been attacked. You know, buildings have fallen. Children have lost their parents. You know, you go all the way down the alphabet. That's what Jeremiah did when he wrote Lamentations. Every chapter in Lamentations is 22 verses. And there's 22 characters in the Hebrew alphabet. Huh. And each verse starts with the next alphabet character. So, in your handout, just for a reference, I gave you the Hebrew alphabet.
Did you?
The 22 characters. It's toward the last of it. But that's what...
It's also in Psalms 119, right?
Yeah, it's Kevin. Man, you deserve a candy bar for that one. Psalms 119 and also Proverbs 31. So this isn't a new concept in the Bible. It does happen. But what's interesting with Lamentations is it's every chapter. Now, every chapter is 22 verses. Now, chapter 3 is 66 verses. So he does this pattern three times. He'll do AAA, BBB. That's for chapter 3. That's why it's 66 verses. Now, obviously, in the translation to English, we've lost the pattern. That's why a lot of people may not realize it's there, but it's just kind of interesting to know that Jeremiah, that's what he did when he wrote these books. So, all right, so let's look at chapter 1 real quick. Let's go to Lamentations 1. We're going to read a few verses. Yeah, Dale?
Have you ever heard of acrostic being in the Gospel of Luke? Mm-mm. Pastor Jeff Baum did that.
Oh, really?
3 years ago.
I wouldn't doubt it. I mean, it's a form of Hebrew poetry that's written a lot. Acrostic, parallelism. There's several that are used, but yeah. All right, so let's look at Lamentations 1. I'm just going to look at the first few verses here. This is Jeremiah standing amongst the ruins. Verse 1. How doth the city sit solitary that was full of people? And notice that's not a question. That's an exclamation point. He knows why it's solitary, because of disobedience. How has she become as a widow? He knows how. She that was great among the nations and princes among the provinces, how has she become a tributary? So he's just standing there, just, you know, what a mess. Why? This is just terrible. And he goes through this chapter. And the thing that the application for us for this chapter, it's a song of correction. The first half of the chapter is Jeremiah talking about the city. It's kind of a third person. In chapter 12, it's like he gives the microphone to Jerusalem and the city itself in verse 12, chapter 1, verse 12. The city, it's like the city is speaking to these people as they're marching out in chains. The city says in verse 12, is it nothing to you, all ye that pass by? Behold and see if there is any sorrow like unto my sorrow. down verse 16, he says, "For these things I weep, my eyes are watering, there's no comforter." Look at verse 18. The city is saying, "The Lord's righteous," in verse 18, "for I have rebelled. I've rebelled against his commandments, and I pray ye, all you people, you see my sorrow. I've called for my lovers." And she kind of goes on just talking about, "I'm a mess because of you people." That's kind of what chapter 1 is about. It's about when God's people, I put it on your hand out there, when God's people forsake God, they forsake the church, they forsake fellowship, they forsake reading his word, they forsake obedience and everything else that we know we should do as God's people, there will be a day when the Lord will bring chastisement in order to bring you to repentance. Maybe a year from now, maybe next week, maybe 5 years. God won't allow sin to go unpunished forever. And that's what chapter 1 really kind of resonates with me when I read that. Yeah, no, Kevin? Yeah, did you have something?
I got a weird, like, if you look up Jehovah or Yahweh in Hebrew,
yeah,
the symbols for it are man with arms up, behold, reveal, light, live. And then it would be nail, secure, join, hook. And then man with arms up, behold, reveal, live. And then also arm, action, work, to do.
Yeah, that's something cool. You point out there, the Hebrew alphabet, the letters have meanings. They also have numbers. They have a whole bunch of cool things. So, yeah, you could probably build something out of that. But all right, so chapter 2, I'm not really going to go through every chapter like I was wanting to, but chapter 2 is about what happens when we continue to disobey. Chapter 2, it's like the Lord now speaks in chapter 2, giving us his perspective. And what I wanted to point out here in verse 6, God is basically telling him, or he's saying that he hath violently taken away his tabernacle, as if it were of a garden. I'm talking about God. He's destroyed his places of the assembly. The Lord has caused the solemn feasts and the Sabbath to be forgotten in Zion. He's despised the indignation of his anger, the king and the priests. He casts off his altar. He destroys the wall in verse 8. In verse 9, her gates are sunk into the mud. Verse 10, the elders of the city, they sit on the ground, they don't know what to do. So what's happened here is God's telling us in chapter 2, it's just like when you take away a toy from a kid. God is taking back some of the ordinances that he gave to Israel back in the day. You know, back in the Moses time. He's taking away the tabernacle, temple. He's taking away the priests. He's taking away the altars. They have nothing. And the parallel for us is you don't need anything to worship God. We don't need this building.
He is sufficient.
He is sufficient. He is our portion. God can take all this, and he did. He took all these things away, but they still they could still worship him and turn to him. And it also, I put this lament, as it goes through the chapter, it reminds us that sin and disobedience in our lives will affect other people, our kids, our families, because there's some terrible things that went on with the kids. They suffered huge because of the sins of the parents. So when we sin, it doesn't just affect us, as we all know. It affects everybody. It did in the Old Testament. Yeah. All right, so chapter 3 is where it really turns. I really wanted to spend more time on 3, but chapter 3 is just an awesome, beautiful chapter. Chapter 3, it starts out, verse 1, Jeremiah, now he takes the grief personal. He's been talking about Jerusalem. Chapter 3, he's looking at himself, and he says, "I'm a man that has seen all this affliction, the rod of his wrath." And he goes through this just depressing series of verses. And look at verse 18. Chapter 3, verse 18. Jeremiah says, "My strength and my hope has perished from the Lord." He is done. He is so down. He's at the bottom. He has no hope. Verse 19, "Remembering my afflictions and my misery," he's just humbled. Look at verse 21. "This I recall to my mind, therefore I have hope." So now he's going to start turning. He hit the bottom when he's seen everything, and now God in verse 20, 21, 22 starts The clouds start parting. Look at verse 22. Now he realizes, it is of the Lord's mercies that we are not consumed, because his compassions fail not. They are new every morning. Great is thy faithfulness. The Lord's my portion, therefore I will have hope in him. The Lord is good to them that wait for him, to the soul that seeks him. It's good that a man should have both hope and quietly wait for the salvation of the Lord. All right, so now he's back. Our guy is back. He realizes God could have destroyed every single Jew in the city, including Jeremiah, and they would be done, and he could have found some other method to bring about his promises from Abraham. But God doesn't do that to us. He loves us. He doesn't forsake us. Jeremiah realizes God has not left. They're just being chastised. There is hope. Sometimes days can seem so long. And I know we're all adults here. We know how long days can be. And you just can't wait to go home and go to bed and get up the next day and there's new mercies. And that's plural, by the way. Mercies is plural because there's more than one. It ain't like mercy from the Lord. Mercies. I had mercies yesterday when I got up. And you guys did too. We all have mercies today. We're going to have new mercies tomorrow. And we just need to always have hope in God, faith that he wants what's best for us every day. So we just have that hope that he hasn't forsaken us. He's not going to destroy us. I think that's it. Chapter 4 is just some more of what went on in Jerusalem. He kind of compares Jerusalem to how it was back in the day. He talks about how Jerusalem, whenever Nebuchadnezzar was coming down from the north, Jerusalem leaders did the same thing we do. They were trying to find help from Egypt. They actually sent a delegation to Egypt. And does anyone remember what Egypt always stands for in the Bible?
Bondage.
The world.
Oh.
Close. Bondage. It's also. But we always want to go to the world when we have trouble. If we have money trouble, I need to go find someone to give me money, or I need to get a loan, or I need to do something in my own ways, instead of submitting to the Lord and say, Lord, how can you save me or help me in this situation, and letting him do it. And that's what Jerusalem did. They went. They didn't rely on God to save them from Nebuchadnezzar. They ran to Egypt, to the world. That's what we do. That's what we need to not do. And that's what Jeremiah was telling them to do. Don't go to Egypt. Submit to the punishment, and you'll be okay. But anyway, so chapter 5 is kind of the ending prayer of hope. If you look at Lamentations 5, the last few verses, Jeremiah realizes in verse 19 that thou, O Lord, you remain forever. Your throne is forever. Jeremiah is just submitting to him that you're going to save us. Your mighty hand punished us, and your mighty hand will bring us back. And that's what happens in 70 years. Like I did a quick application. The last point, how does this apply to us? The Book of Lamentations didn't have to happen. If Israel would have turned back in Isaiah's time, there would not be a Jerusalem destroyed. If they would have turned, we're the same. If we would do what we need to do, and God will bring us through. Also, in the handout, I put "The Great Is Thy Faithfulness" because that's one of my favorite hymns, and that was directly out of Lamentations 3 that we read. And I put that it was written by an old Methodist guy. He was an old man looking back on how faithful God has been over his life. And he penned the great hymn, "Great Is Thy Faithfulness." Billy Graham used it all the time in his crusades. And I love that hymn, and you can see Lamentations right there in it. That's Lamentations.